This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a new report released today underscores the growing persecution of Christians around the world. What countries are the worst abusers, and what can you do to help your brothers and sisters in Christ? President of Open Doors USA, Dr. David Curry, joins me in studio in just a moment. Day two of the confirmation hearings on Capitol Hill, J.C. Derrick with World Magazine is here with an update on today's hearings for AG nominee Jeff Sessions and Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson. That's coming up here on Washington Watch. Also, the 115th Congress is gearing up to advance the agenda affirmed by voters in the November election. That agenda includes a number of values issues. I was on the Hill today for a summit of the Values Action Team. The new chairperson of the Congressional Values Action Team, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, is here a little bit later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your drive home today, you can visit later, TonyPerkins.com, and catch what you missed. Also, lots of resources there for you. I do hope you're signed up for our legislative alerts because it's going to start moving very quickly here in the next week and a half. And to keep up and be involved, know what to do, how to do it, to make a difference, you want to sign up for our daily update and our alerts at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. For its third straight year, the persecution of Christians worldwide has hit yet another record high. That, according to the 2017 World Watch List released today by Open Doors USA. For almost 60 years, Open Doors has worked in the world's most oppressive and restrictive countries, strengthening Christians to stand strong in the face of persecution and equipping them to shine Christ's light in these difficult and dark places. Here to talk about the 2017 World Watch List is our good friend, Dr. David Curry. He is the president of Open Doors USA. David, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you again.
It's always a pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to be here in D.C.
We spoke a few weeks ago, and you told me the new list was going to be coming out, and there was, you know, more troubling signs. And so the latest report tells us what?
Well, what it tells us is that persecution is continuing to grow. 2016, during the reporting period, was the most dramatic rise in persecution that we have seen yet. And I have said this now for 3 to 4 years in a row. I think that's
sitting in that same chair.
Exactly. I think that's an indictment on how this past administration has dealt with it. But it also signals an opportunity for the incoming administration to put this front and center in their foreign policy, because it's fundamental, Tony, what's happening to the Christians around the world in countries all over the map, and we're going to talk about a few of them, is fundamental. It's human right to have the freedom of conscience, decide what you want to believe.
Well, even the UN has recognized that as a fundamental human right, and that is the freedom of religion, the ability to have a religion, not have a religion, change your religion. And it is a statutorily stated priority of this country by Congress, signed into law by the president, but yet it's not been so much so at under the current administration at the State Department. Before we go into the list of, I'm going to go into maybe the top 10. You've got a top 50 ranking, 50 countries. And folks, you can find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. This is not subjective. I mean, this is objective criteria you look at that you measure these year by year. So I just want to put that out front here. This is not just people saying, well, I read this in the paper, and that makes you have people on the ground. You're evaluating this. Tell our listeners how you rank these countries.
Well, methodology is really important, because sometimes you'll have the folks who have an anecdotal list. They'll say, these people really annoy us. What we've done is gone grassroots level, talk to pastors, talk to people who have been involved in these incidents. We're not just talking to that upper crust within the society, the elites, the bishops, the cardinals. We're getting right down to it. And so then we score across a number of facets, the violence incidents, how many are violent, what is the pressure, what's the squeeze within the family, the community, the national government, and then we give them each a numerical score, and it adds up to the World Watch List. So when you get a country at the top of the World Watch List, it means across all spheres of life, personal, family, community, and even violence, it ranks exceptionally high.
And you have people on the ground in these countries.
In every country on the list, these we have people on the ground who have delivered this data, who've done the research, and compiled it.
So I just want to make that clear. This is not somebody's watched CNN and said that, hey, this country looks bad. These folks are on the ground. Not only they're reporting this, but and we're going to get to this in a moment as well. But you are walking alongside these Christians, helping them in very tangible ways with relief, with support, with encouragement. You're doing a lot to help them there on the ground.
We want to stand with them side by side. We really feel like this is the message that's transformational, and we want to see it survive first and then thrive.
All right, let's go down that top 10 list of the worst abusers in the 2017 World Watch list.
Well, North Korea is number one 16 years in a row, just barely. Somalia is number two right behind it. Two totally different environments. North Korea, a family business, so to speak, a cult created around the grandfather, now carried on to the grandson.
Where you have to worship the Kim family.
Yeah, that's right. Kim Il-sung-ism is the religion of North Korea, and anything that challenges their sense of deity in themselves is considered hostile to the regime. So that puts Christians front and center, and Christians.
I was reading through that, and that's almost like the early church, where if you didn't bow down to Caesar or offer incense to Caesar, you would be killed. And that's actually what's happening.
You can't go anywhere
in
North Korea without seeing big posters, statues, where people have to give obeisance to these folks. And Christianity is not about that at all. So they are a hostile class within the country. If you're caught owning a Bible, talking about Jesus, suspected of it, you can be arrested. They do have these communistic old school systems, neighborhood watch. If you're visiting, having a small group, you'll be reported. In that way, it's very Kafka-esque, you know, in its regime. Different than what you see in the Islamic extremists.
Like Somalia, number
like
two
Somalia,
on the list.
In North Korea, you have the benefit, so to speak, of being arrested. In Somalia, if you're suspected of being a Christian or known to be a Christian, you can be just beheaded on the spot by extremist rebels. So very violent, no due process at all.
So, yeah, the contrast there, North Korea, it's more the government. In Somalia, oftentimes, of course, Somalia doesn't really have much of a government,
no.
And it's a clan and tribal led, but you have these Islamic officials stir up crowds. And it's the crowds that actually execute.
Yeah, the extremists, the Al-Shabaab extremists and other extremist tribes. Mob violence is part of that, the family level of violence. If your family knows that you've committed to Christ, you can be killed by your family. So it's brutal in Somalia. It was nearly number one this year, but not quite.
Just behind Somalia is Afghanistan.
Yeah, Afghanistan is a very difficult area. No strong established church there. Taliban is increasing in strength again. You have tribal areas, very difficult, very violent in Afghanistan.
Pakistan
is one of those countries. There's a historic church in Pakistan that is under increasing pressure. Muslim background believers, people who come from the Muslim faith under, you know, it's very dangerous to convert. They don't recognize it. But if the culture sees somebody who's converted, you'll be hurt. Evangelistic efforts, evangelism, evangelical churches, great pressure, violence against them. Pakistan has strong blasphemy laws that are really under a lot of pressure. So even moderate Muslims who speak out on it, as you well know and many of your listeners will know, risk death, assassination, these sorts of things. It's a country on the bubble. Right now, it's quite high on the World Watch list. It could get worse. We're praying it gets better.
Wow. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest, Dr. David Curry, he is the president of Open Doors. We're discussing their World Watch List 2017. And by the way, coming up this Sunday, it's National Religious Liberty Day, where we focus on religious liberty. Of course, you cannot look here within our own country at the the importance of religious liberty without looking abroad as well, because religious freedom is not an American right. It is a human right. Even the United Nations, as we said a moment ago, recognizes that fact. So next on the list after Pakistan, number five is
Sudan. And you have a country that has had a dictator, more or less authoritarian regime, al-Bashir, who has bombed Christians in the Nuba Mountains. He's trying to isolate them, drive them out, wants to impose a strict Sharia law. It's a failed state, and he's a war criminal, and Christians have been under great pressure. Very dangerous to be a Christian there.
Of course, we see next on the list, this is a country, actually the next three countries have been very prominent in the news in the last few years, Syria.
Yes, Syria number six, Iraq number seven. Obviously, the Islamic State and the story there is well known by people. One of the blessings is the revival that is happening underground in the Syrian church, but it is under great pressure. A lot of Christians have left Syria. I was talking with a Syrian pastor just today. He sees more violence. There's going to need to be a transition within the heart of these people in Syria to understand the value of religious pluralism, that Christian faith should have a role there. The historic church
it's been
freedom.
There. I mean, that, we're talking about the area of the world that is the birthplace of Christianity.
Oh, Damascus, the Paul experience, right? And the historic church is still present in Syria, just under pressure. It exists, intact in Damascus, but in Aleppo and other places, not so much.
You have to be, I mean, obviously it's got to be heart-wrenching, disturbing when you go and you see these things that are taking place to men, women, and children mm-hmm. in these parts of the country. But you also have to leave with a profound sense of encouragement to see these people. As you just mentioned, I think the pastor you mentioned was at your press conference today.
Yeah.
Their commitment to Christ.
Yes. I mean,
it's amazing.
The root of what we're all about is lifting up the name of Jesus. And when we see that happen, whether it's in North Korea or in North Dakota, good things happen, even in the face of persecution. So it's inspiring.
Rounding out that list, we have Iran, Yemen, and Eritrea make out the top 10 of the countries.
Iran, obviously, a lot of folks know about that regime. Seems to be opening up to the West over the last couple of years. Don't be drawn in on that. High levels of persecution. The only reason it's not higher this year is because of all the violence in the other sectors. Yemen has driven a lot of the Christians out due to their civil war. We call it a civil war. It's really Saudi Arabia and Iran as a proxy war there, but it's on the list and near the top because of the attacks on the Catholic ministries there and other places that people may have heard about. Eritrea is a regime that imposes Sharia law on their people. It's a despotic rule. A lot of Christians historically, an Orthodox church in Eritrea that's been under great pressure.
Hmm. So, well, David, we're out of time, but before we go, how can people be helpful to open doors as they come alongside these other Christians?
Like you said, be knowledgeable, be writing your representatives of the administration, tell them this is important to you, pray through this list.
Pray, get this information, pray, have your church pray, your Sunday school classes, your youth groups pray, and then support organizations like Open Doors. Our family does. They're a great ministry. We know what they do. We watch them. We work with them, and I cannot speak more highly of them. Dr. David Curry, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to get an update from Capitol Hill on today's confirmation hearings, day two in the confirmation hearings. That's coming up next here on Washington Watch.
From the ruling to uphold Obamacare's individual mandate, to the ruling to redefine marriage, to the ruling that allows the government to seize a citizen's home, these are the many important decisions that the United States Supreme Court has made recently. But did you know that each of these three decisions was determined by a one-vote margin? The Supreme Court's decisions affect all of us, and it decides about 70 cases every year. Over the next 8 years, we could get as many as 4 new Supreme Court justices. Furthermore, these justices will have a huge impact on the sanctity of human life, religious liberty, and the size and scope of government, and even parental rights. Join Family Research Council Action as we work to ensure the confirmation of Supreme Court justices who will uphold the Constitution and simply apply the law as the founders intended. Become a member today at frcaction.org. That's frcaction.org.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What do the Vatican, Malta, Dominican Republic, El Salvador, Nicaragua, and Chile have in common? Abortion is not allowed under any circumstances. These six nations are joined by numerous others who only allow abortion if the mother's life is in danger. Even then, abortion is only allowed sparingly. Yet while many nations limit abortion, the United States is one of only seven countries in the world that permit elective abortion right up until the moment of birth, putting us in the top 4% of having the most abhorrent abortion policies in the world, a distinction we share with repressive regimes such as North Korea and China. Numerous third world countries protect the unborn, yet the so-called leader of the free world butchers them. Which is the more civilized society? May God bring us to repentance. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. 1,790 families have had their homes rebuilt because of you, the listener at American Family Radio, when you have partnered with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims to no fault of their own who lose everything to see volunteers show up and help them rebuild. 2 years ago, we started a rapid response division that goes within 72 hours and since then have gone to 15 communities across America. Would you consider becoming a part of 8 Days of Hope as we continue to look for ways to grow the ministry in 2017, please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved, submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well. Please continue to pray for the ministry as we look forward to what God has in store for us. Thank you so much for your prayers, your financial support, and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
AFR urges you to support the ministry of 8 Days of Hope at 8daysofhope.com.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. I do want to encourage you to check out the World Watch List 2017 with Open Doors. And great ministry and extremely important work. And you say, well, you know, we got religious liberty issues here at home. The two are intertwined, all right? And that's why I've been paying so much attention to the Secretary of State selection, because the State Department is literally tasked by the Congress. That's one of their top foreign policy objectives, is to promote religious freedom as a human right. That has been completely eclipsed in the last 8 years by the radical liberal agenda of the Obama administration. But after 8 years, it is layered deep, deep, deep within the State Department. It's got to be rooted out. Well, today, President-elect Donald Trump's pick for Secretary of State went before senators for his confirmation hearing. Former ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson faced some tough questions during his Senate confirmation hearing. They're not so much on religious freedom, but rather on the issue of Russia. Now, here's a portion of the exchange between Rex Tillerson and Florida Senator Marco Rubio.
Let me ask you this question. Is Vladimir Putin a war criminal?
I would not use that term.
Vladimir Putin and his cronies are responsible for ordering the murder of countless dissidents, journalists, and political opponents.
I do not have sufficient information to make that claim.
Are you aware that people who oppose Vladimir Putin wind up dead all over the world, poisoned, shot in the back of the head? And do you think that was coincidental, or do you think that it is quite possible or likely, as I believe, that they were part of an effort to murder his political opponents?
Well, people who speak up for freedom in regimes that are repressive are often a threat, and these things happen to them. In terms of assigning specific responsibilities, I would have to have more information. You know, as I indicated, I feel it's important that in advising the president, if confirmed, that I deal with facts, that I deal with sufficient information, which means having access to all information, and I'm sure there's a large body of information that I've never seen that's in the classified realm. I look forward, if confirmed, to becoming fully informed, but I am not willing to make conclusions on what is only publicly available or have been publicly reported.
None of this is classified, Mr. Tillerson. These people are dead. Political opponents are dead.
Your question was people who were directly responsible for that. I'm not disputing these people are dead.
With us now is J.C. Derrick. He is with World Magazine and was on Capitol Hill today in the various hearings that were taking place. J.C., welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. It's good to be here.
All right. That exchange between Marco Rubio and Tillerson, probably one of the more pointed moments in terms of his exchange with Republicans. What was your sense of today's hearing for Rex Tillerson?
Yeah, I think you were exactly right to zero in on that moment. And I would say it was not only the most pointed exchange with a Republican, but really on either side, which is it's notable that obviously it was a Republican, being Tillerson is a Republican nominee. And so Senator Rubio has had three turns today, and each time has gone after Tillerson very directly on some of these issues that, as he noted, are in the public domain. It does not require classified information. And over and over and over again, Mr. Tillerson has said he just doesn't have enough information to make these judgments, which Mr. Rubio, Senator Rubio finds particularly concerning when you're talking about something as basic as Saudi Arabia. You know, can you say that they're a human rights violator? And Mr. Tillerson said he didn't have enough information to make that judgment. So there's a lot of questions as to, if you don't have that information, if we can't agree on that baseline, there's a lot of questions about what other factors Mr. Tillerson may be taking into account when he's conducting foreign policy.
Your overall sense of Tillerson's confirmation, the hearing, other areas of weakness that you see that maybe senators zeroing in on?
Well, clearly Russia was the number one issue. I mean, on both sides of the aisle, it kept coming up over and over and over again. There was also a lot of talk about climate change, particularly from the Democratic side. There were some talks of potential conflicts of interest, but I would say more than anything, it was this issue of human rights. If there's a weakness, it was that, there's suspicion that Mr. Tillerson has a penchant for putting the interests of, in the past, his company ahead of human rights, basically the ends justifies the means kind of mentality. And, I think if you're looking for a weakness, I really didn't see any evidence today, any of his testimony that would really assuage those concerns.
Now, let's talk pure politics when it comes to the confirmation. Now, operating under what the Democrats established, it's just 51 votes, and they can approve these nominations. That is thanks to Harry Reid, who changed the rules on these nominations. But you have 52 Republicans, so he has to be able to get almost all of the Republicans. Now, we've had Lindsey Graham, John McCain, and, of course, Marco Rubio all raising questions. Is there some question about whether or not he's confirmed?
Oh, there definitely is, and I'll give it to you on two fronts. Number one, yesterday, Senator Sessions said that the nominee for Attorney General said that he would not vote on either his own nomination or any other nomination. So depending on how the timing went, you could be down a Republican vote there, but then just getting out of committee could be an issue because no one's really talking about this, but he's got to get out of committee before he gets to the Senate floor. And right now, Republicans only have a one-seat majority on the Foreign Relations Committee. So theoretically, if all Democrats and Marco Rubio voted against Tillerson, then they could block his nomination.
Very interesting. Well, J.C., appreciate your insights from the Hill. We're going to obviously continue to track these nomination hearings, confirmation hearings, as they continue for the foreseeable future. So we'll get you back on. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again. All right, J.C. Derrick with World Magazine. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. These are important. Many, many aspects of these hearings. But again, I want to underscore how important the Secretary of State is and what's been happening at the State Department
when it comes to just what we were talking about earlier with David Curry, religious freedom. The State Department can flex America's muscles to protect believers abroad. Now, speaking of believers and values, we're going to be talking next with the chairman of the House Values Action Team, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler. She's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, I want to take a moment to talk about oil, something I don't always talk about, but in light of Tillerson's confirmation hearing, everybody's thinking about oil. Of course, oil from a political standpoint is very different than what I am looking at it as, but we ought to look at oil because it's going to affect all of us out of our pocketbook. So I'll give you some opinions based on some of the analysis that I did back in December. So right now we got the Energy Information Administration has put out their weekly inventories for crude oil. Weekly inventories up 4.1 million barrels. That's what the crude oil inventories were up. That's a little bit more than expected. And they got gasoline. Gasoline was up as well. We saw gasoline rise 5 million barrels. And distilled products other than gasoline, this would be diesel fuel, heating oil, jet fuel, kerosene, those kinds of things, up for 8.4 million barrels. Now, the upside to these inventory numbers is that there is beginning to be a little bit of glut in gasoline. That might slow down the pace of increases at the pump. That's good news. But here's the deal. If we are going to see a rebalancing in the whole energy sector, which some are calling for by the end of the first quarter, I am not in that camp. Don't believe it's even possible for a rebalancing to happen that soon. I think at best, it's the middle of the last quarter of the year before we see any real rebalancing. Why? Because it's all going to be based on industrial production globally, not just here. So we'll watch it close, but it is going to be important for our pocketbooks.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, this election, which started out as a personality-driven election, the general election, you had Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, all about their personalities, very little about policy. It ended up being a policy-driven election. 59% of voters that voted for Donald Trump and Mike Pence in a post-election poll said they voted, major factor in their vote that they cast for the president was based upon the Republican Party's platform and its strong statements on life and religious liberty. It ended up being a contrast of ideas and policy positions. On Capitol Hill, there is a group of legislators, congressmen, driving a values agenda, which was a large portion of the platform and what voters went to the polls to vote on. And just recently, the House Values Action Team announced a new leader. In fact, there was a summit today. I just came back from the Hill a little bit ago, where the congressional leadership, along with groups that work on these issues, got together for a day-long summit. The new chairman of the Values Action Team for the 115th Congress is our good friend, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri, and she joins us now by phone. Vicki, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. We're glad to be here.
And again, congratulations on your new post as chairman of the Values Action Team in the House. Confident you're going to do a great job. Tell our listeners a little bit about the priorities that you see for the Values Action Team going into this 115th Congress.
Well, I tell you, we are so blessed to be here at this time in our nation's history and to be able to advance these pieces of legislation that are so sorely needed to repair the foundations of our country and to stand for values and life. And certainly, life is fundamental, and we are going to be promoting that we defund Planned Parenthood, which we are very thankful that Speaker Paul Ryan is very supportive of this and announced last week that's going to be part of our reconciliation bill as our steps to repeal Obamacare and replace it with the a true health care plan that Americans can afford and want. But we also have other life issues that we feel like we have an opportunity to bring forward, and such as the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which is going to protect those little babies once they reach about 20 weeks, can feel pain, to say you can no longer do an abortion at that point because this baby can feel pain. We also are going to go after and protecting our conscience rights of healthcare workers and making sure that no one is forced to participate in an abortion that they don't want to. We're going to advance a Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which says just what should be common sense and decency, that if a child survives an abortion, that you have to provide life-saving treatment for them and help them. And but there's other issues. One of our top priorities, we hope that within the first 100 days we'll be able to move forward, is a repeal of the Johnson Amendment. Our co-chair, Jody Heiss, is a pastor who is sponsoring this, perfect person to be the main sponsor of this bill that allows for freedom of speech in our pulpits. And just this simple thing alone will unleash the pastors of our country to feel even more empowered and emboldened to preach the Word of God and what the truth is, and that in itself will make a huge difference in our country. But religious liberties, whether it deals with military chaplains, our Defense Department, something I'm interested in and many people are, is making sure that these executive orders and the guidance put out by the various departments under President Obama are reversed as it relates to the democratic and redefinition of the word what sex means to include sex identity and sexual orientation as it relates to our schools, forcing every school in this country to have to change their policies in this very sensitive area. And so we're going to be watching, and hopefully President Trump will undo a lot of those things through executive order, but if not, we're going to continue to advance those things as well.
Well, and you mentioned the Johnson Amendment. That's something that he spoke about frequently on the campaign trail, returning the voice to pastors, the freedom to speak in the pulpits regarding political issues, and he's made that a top priority. But to underscore this, Congresswoman Hartzler, you're not just a small group talking about these issues. You have commitments from the leadership. You have a broad coalition of values-oriented members of Congress, Christians, believers that have come together, and you've got the leadership standing with you.
We feel so blessed by that. We do have in the House of Representatives people who stand for life and who believe in marriage and who believe in religious freedom, and they are with us. And so we look forward to working with the leadership in the House, as well as a large, large coalition of members here in the House who many of us feel like we are here because we're called to be here. And these are issues that are near and dear to our hearts. And we're thankful now for the changes that the people of this country have made after the election, that we'll have somebody in the White House that also will support legislation when we get there to reinstate our religious freedoms and to protect life. So we have a wonderful opportunity, and we plan to make the most of it and get these things put into law.
Well, and we're going to encourage people to pray and to participate when needed to help get these values issues through. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
You bet. Thanks for all your support and leadership. God bless.
All right. Thank you. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler from Missouri. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And I do want to encourage you. In fact, we had this meeting today. It was almost like a church meeting. It was phenomenal. And you would be encouraged to see what's happening in Congress as a result of your participation. All right, when we come back, Donald Trump calling out the fake news. We're going to talk about it, get your thoughts on it as I take your phone calls.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
The gay agenda, Islam, liberation theology, aggressive socialism. You ask yourself, how should I respond to these attacks on my Christian faith? How can I share Christ in a sinful culture? Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. An online Master of Arts in Apologetics from WBS will prepare you to defend and share your faith in an increasingly hostile world. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning challenge culture. WBS.edu.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Thanks for joining us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. Today, Donald Trump held his first press conference since the election, and it was actually kind of interesting. He was in New York at this press conference, and he calls out CNN's Jim Acosta, who was trying to ask a question, and I want to play this clip for you, and then I want to get your take on it. So this was earlier today, Donald Trump at a press conference in New York City.
Your organization's terrible. Let's go. Go ahead. Quiet. Quiet. Go ahead. She's asking a question. Don't be rude. Don't be rude. No, I'm not going to give you a question. I'm not going to give you a question. You are fake news.
Yeah, that was Donald Trump at a press conference. Jim Acosta of CNN was trying to ask a question. He said, "No, I'm not going to take your question." And he kept persisting and said, "No, you're being rude. Be quiet. I'm not taking a question from you. You are fake news." Now, the context of this is that CNN, BuzzFeed was a part of this story that some potential, reportedly, some foreign former. Agent, you know, came up with this information about something that Donald Trump was involved in Russia. Denies it. I have no idea about it, but that's not the point. The point is this is a whole new way for a president, a politician to deal with the press. And I want to get your take on this. 866-372-7234. You know, what do you think about his exchange with CNN? Are you glad to see the incoming president take on the press in such a direct way, or does it concern you? What do you think? 866-372-7234. I think a lot of people are – in fact, I think that's why a lot of people supported Donald Trump, is that he just –
did not do things the way it was normally done, and he took on the press. He said, I mean, he took on the press his entire campaign. And he was ungagged, refused to be gagged by political correctness. Many people were emboldened by that. But do you have concerns? Do you have concerns that maybe, you know, he's got to talk to the press because that's how we get information? I want to get your thoughts on it. And 866-372-7234. We're going to go to Alabama first. Alabama first begins with A, so we're going there first. Bill, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you today?
Pretty good. Say, I think Donald Trump handled that pretty much the way that we think we should handle it. I mean, if they're gonna continue to put this fake news out there, why even deal with them? And he's got 19 million Twitter accounts or followers or something like this here. That's where he gets his news taken out, gets his news put out. But I have another question, if I can ask, please.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm talking about the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. From his actions that he took last year, why did he get so much support when they voted for the new Speaker this year?
Well, let me give you the pure politics of it, that the reason, and I think he was going to have a challenge, but the president-elect, Donald Trump, selected Reince Priebus as his chief of staff. And Reince is from Wisconsin, longtime friends with Speaker Ryan, very close friends. And I don't know this for certain, but I just think it had to happen that he interceded for him and assured the president and tried to patch up that relationship. And I've talked to the speaker, and he is, I think he's on board with where the Trump administration wants to go. And that is fulfilling the promises that were made. I think he's going to move with that agenda and help facilitate it. So I think it was a relationship that was patched up by the chief of staff for the incoming president. So we'll see. Bill, thanks so much for listening and for calling in. All right, let's go to Missouri, where Stacy is on the line. Stacy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Your thoughts on the president-elect having the confrontation with CNN?
Yes, I do have a thought on that. I think it's about time that somebody finally speaks up against the media, the press, whatever you want to call them. You know, I go to this restaurant often that has CNN on their TV, which just drives me up the wall because the way they lie, I don't know where their conscience is. I mean, I just don't understand it. So it was so nice for him to finally call them what they are and to not give them the time of day. It was like justice was kind of served, and I'm excited to see what else he's going to do because it's just frustrating, and so many people just blindly listen to this stuff, and it's just got to stop. So maybe he'll be the guy that will do it.
All right. Very interesting. I think you are not alone, Stacy. I think there are many other people that share that viewpoint. All right, let's keep on moving. Let's stay in Missouri. Let's go to Beth. Beth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi.
How you doing today?
Doing okay. I commend President Trump for what he said today to the American press. And they're tired. General Americans, real Americans, are tired of the lies and the propaganda that they spread. And that's why many of us who are neither Democrat nor Republican as such voted for President Trump, because we knew that he would stop it as best as he could. And I commend him for what he said today.
All right. Beth, I think you probably have a lot of folks that share that same view. Let's go to Virginia, where David is on the line. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I praise the Lord and thank him for Trump's comments today. He's the chaos candidate. and he's wreaking the havoc and the political correctness that we have needed for so long. We've been praying for the seven mountains, and one of the mountains is media. We need to have that redone and reformed along with the other mountains, and this is a wonderful and appreciated first step.
All right, David, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Nebraska, where Norman is on the line. Norman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Bot Radio Network, and follow President Truman's old pattern. No comment.
All right. Thank you, Norman. Let's go to Ohio, where Justin is on the line. Justin, welcome to Washington Watch.
I agree with what Norman said.
All right. Let me go back to something that was said earlier about Trump bypassing the media with his Twitter followers. 19 million I guess that's what the number is. It's what I haven't looked at it lately, but it's in the million. It's big. Compare that to the largest cable news program. Probably O'Reilly. He's usually at the top. Good night. He probably breaks. I get close to 4 million. Right. CNN. I haven't looked at the number. In fact, I was trying to track down the numbers here. I imagine that they may get 1 million. Their largest show, most prominent show, may get 1 million. I'll give them. Let's give them 2 million viewers. All right. Compare that. You know, 19 million to 2 million. See, that's something we've never seen, that dynamic of being able to go around the media and deliver a message. That's a whole new that's a paradigm shift for communication in this country. Now, you know, obviously you're getting it one-sided. The president is just going to be tweeting out what he wants to say and his view of it. Where do you, how do you get the analysis? How do you get the, how do you dig down on it? How do you ask the questions? I think the press has opened themselves up to this because they are just not trusted by the American public. And so I think they have completely opened themselves up to being left behind because people do not trust what they have to say. But is this the best way to get to find out what's happening simply through the Twitter account of the president? Anyway, we'll know what you think about the president-elect and his exchange with CNN today. Let's go to North Carolina, where Eddie is on the line. Eddie, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, sir. Thank you.
Eddie, you still there? I think we lost you.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go right ahead. Your thoughts.
Yes, sir. I love it. I don't have Twitter, but when he Twitters something, the news reports it. So I can find out, I can tell what he's saying.
Well, that's true. They do. That's because he, like, this is his first press conference where he directly interacted with the press since the election.
Right. And that's the reason I love it, because I can find out what I can't find out when I don't, because I don't have Twitter.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for all you do, sir.
All right, Eddie. Thank you for listening. Appreciate it. All right. So far, no one has suggested that they didn't like the exchange the president had with CNN or are bothered by it. Now, if you are, let the screener know, because I want to hear from you. I'm going to put you to the top of the list if you were concerned about it. Let's go to Arkansas, where Charles is on the line. Charles, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, Tony, I thought it was a great thing that he did what he did. I also think that he set a precedent for the rest of them. You better not put out a bunch of fake news and then ask me you want to talk to me. I think it really did set a precedence for the future of any press or news conference. And I'll hang up and listen to you. Thank you.
All right, Charles. There's no question. No question that he is establishing the boundaries by which he's going to operate as the president. And so now there's other ways that the administrations have done this. I mean, how many times have you seen Barack Obama sit down with Fox News? I mean, I can count, I don't know, maybe two or three times. Now, I'm sure it's probably more, but that's the only ones I can recall. Sit down all the time with MSNBC. in CNN because they were favorable to him. And so they control a lot of this by access. They give those that say good things about them and basically parrot what they once said, they give them access. So you can shut them off by access. But this is a whole different, this is taking it to a whole different level where you basically call them out. And, you know, call out CNN for being fake news. As I said, it's a whole new level. I'm going to try to work another call here. Let's go to Missouri where Bob is on the line. Bob, very quickly, your thoughts.
Yeah, Tony, real quick. Okay, so first of all, we have a new PC definition. It's called presidential correctness. But the thing that Donald Trump's doing now is he's going ahead, and as the other person just said, he's going to set a precedence. And the fact being is this, you report the news, you don't make the news.
True. And that's what and that's where the this has been happening for a long time. In this 24-hour, 7-day-a-week news cycle, Bob, and you have these cable news networks which have increasingly gone to talking heads and not just reporting the news, but commentating on the news. You have the commentary, you have all these people on there talking about it. They're trying to get ratings, and so they got to say the most outlandish things or, you know, be aggressive to get viewers. It blurs the line between reporting the news, making the news, and commenting on the news. So you're absolutely right. This is going to be very fascinating to see how this unfolds. My only word of caution is that the press historically, not in recent years, but historically the press has played a very important role in our republic in digging down, getting information, asking questions, getting answers to issues that are of concern to the American public. Now, clearly when, you know, Soros has put his money into the press and into these organizations, they've become very tilted to the left. Maybe the pendulum is swinging back, but we got to make sure that we still have a means of holding our elected officials accountable. And part of that is you've got to stay involved. You've got to be engaged in the process. And organizations like ours, clearly, I mean, look, we're an advocacy organization, but we're reporting the news and the events that happen from the Christian perspective. I'm not going to hide that. We're reporting it from our worldview. And, of course, we're bringing the newsmakers. Every day I bring members of Congress and other leaders, so you hear directly from them. And then when there are things that are happening, we encourage you to take certain action steps. But this will not work if Americans and Christians in particular, that's who I'm speaking to, if you want to be a spectator. Because I'm very optimistic going into this, but it could, you know, things can happen. We've got to be there to encourage, support, and hold accountable. So I hope you will stay involved and engaged. All right, out of time. Hey, I want to thank everybody for calling today. Great feedback. Very informative and instructive. Okay, we'll be back, Lord willing, again tomorrow night. I hope you will as well. Until then. Yes, until then, I leave you once again with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.